This is an interview with Marcia Peskin for the Youngstown State University Oral History Program concerning the Save Our Valley campaign as part of the Ecumenical Coalition by Philip Bracey at Marcia Peskin's home on April the 7th, 1981 at 1:30 p.m.
I will someday. I'm just tired of hearing it. I got involved with the coalition through John Greenman, a friend and neighbor who, I don't know how he got involved with it, but he just called me and said they needed someone to act as office manager. That's the first position I had there.
That was approximately what time?
March, let's see, March of 19.
How did you first find out about the shutdown itself? Do you recall
radio.
It? You did?
Mm-hmm. I remember hearing it on the radio.
Okay. After, let's say that would be March of 78, you were first involved. Mm-hmm. What duties did you perform, you know, with the Save Our Valley campaign?
Save Our Valley campaign was really just a very small part of it. A lot of people think that the Ecumenical Coalition was just something called Save Our Valley. That was just the finance. Those were just the savings accounts. Now, do you want to know what I had to do with that or what I had to do with the whole thing?
Well, we'll start with the Save Our Valley and move into the general. What exactly was the Save Our Valley campaign?
That was an idea dreamed up by Dick Fernandez, the campaign coordinator. He's from Philadelphia. I don't know if you've had a chance to speak to him yet. He thought that this was a tangible way that people could show their faith in the steel mills and in Youngstown. The idea behind it was that people would open savings accounts in any of a number of banks. I don't even know what it is now, 14 or 20 banks. And at some time in the future, even though we weren't allowed to say this according to banking regulations, the hope was that if there was ever a worker buyout of the plant, that we would be able to persuade at least some of these people to use these savings accounts to purchase stock. But that was way down the line, and that was something we hardly ever talked about because we really had to play it one day at a time. So really the idea was just for the community, not just the community, but we got savings accounts from people all over the country. This was just their way of showing us that they had faith in the Valley. So we went to all the banks, and they all cooperated, some more than others. And the money started to come in slowly at first. I know we had some television ads and some radio ads. I'm trying to think of how we... I think we even had telephone campaigns. I remember telling you when you called me that this all seemed like it happened 10 or 15 years ago, and it does to me. Things that I thought I'd never forget now seem like they were 50 years ago. But we had telephone campaigns. We had callers, volunteers calling up names that we purchased a computer list of names.
For Mahoning County or City of Youngstown or?
It was the Mahoning County. We didn't want to make any long-distance calls, so that ruled out Warren and Niles, you know, it was Austintown, Canfield, Struthers, Poland, the area around here. And I don't even remember, I know, I was the one that called the bank every 2 weeks, all the banks every 2 weeks, and they gave me their figures. And then, I don't know if it was every 2 weeks or once a month, John Greenman would have a press conference and release the figures. I don't even remember what the total was.
That's all right. I mean,
I think it was around a million.
What was the structure of the campaign staff itself? Not the coalition, but the, for instance...
You mean the office staff?
Right.
There were very few of us that worked there at the time. There was Dick Fernandez. Are you talking about paid staff now?
Well,
you're not talking about the unpaid ministers who made up the coalition.
Yeah, the so-called flow chart, you know, within just Save Our Valley, not the the executive committee and the steering committee of the coalition.
Okay, not the steering committee. Okay, then basically you're talking about paid staff. Dick Fernandez was the campaign coordinator at that time. He was, in other words, he was the boss of the office. He was a minister from Philadelphia, and the second in command would have been, there was a second at the time, John Greenman was publicity director, although that wasn't his title, that's not what they call him. Jackie Alford was there. Jackie Alford was supposed to organize something called the Committee of 100. Are you familiar with that at all?
I've read some references.
That was something that didn't work out well at all, and I think it was probably for a number of reasons. I was not too familiar with the committee and the problems that she encountered, because that was something she did all on her own. She didn't require very much of my help, but Jackie tried to organize a group of influential, well-known, not necessarily powerful, well-known community leaders on all levels, from bankers maybe all the way down to, not meaning down in terms,
right.
Union people. And their job was also to get the community rallying behind the whole campaign. The whole Committee of 100 idea didn't work, as I said, and maybe if you talk to Jackie, she can tell you why. So Jackie was the third member on the staff. I was hired as office manager. Ellen Robinson was there. She, I don't know what her title was, secretary or something, I'm not even sure at the time, because after a while we all had different titles, and there was also a crossover of people were always willing to help someone else do the work. There was a secretary named Celeste Jones, who has since moved to Virginia. I guess that's all. I'm trying to visualize the office where everybody sat. I think at the beginning that was the whole paid staff.
And your office was where?
263 West Federal Street, in the High Bum District. Colorful area.
How were you first involved with the Ecumenical Coalition? Is that how, you know, your basic transition from being involved with them to the Save Our Valley campaign? Because you mentioned your role is broader than just the Save Our Valley campaign.
The Save Our Valley campaign was a small aspect of the coalition. When I was hired, I don't remember what my title was, but that was just one chore that I had to do. I never really regarded that as some big separate function. I mean, it was just something I did on Tuesdays or Thursdays, and I did other things on other days. It wasn't as if I was singled out. They just said, Marcia, call the banks every 2 weeks and find out this or that. So really, you know, somebody just told me to do it.
The Save Our Valley campaign was responsible to the steering committee of the coalition, or was there, I'm trying to trace the line of authority as far as was related to
the Save Our Valley campaign didn't have a separate staff or anything, if that's what you mean.
No, I mean, it kind of seemed, it was a spin-off, really, of the coalition. It was kind of an outward, if you will, base, you know, kind of out communication as opposed to internal.
Well, Dick Fernandez was the one that dreamed it up, and Dick Fernandez was one member of the steering committee. So if I had any problems, if I encountered any problems while working on a Save Our Valley campaign issue, I would not have thought to go to the committee. I would have thought to go to Dick.
Yeah. But I mean, his, he would report, if you will, to the steering committee.
Yes.
Was he actually a member of the steering committee?
Yes, he was.
Oh, okay. That was a little unclear in some of the memorandum. I wasn't clear if he was part of that.
Yes, he was.
Okay. Could you expand on, you know, your other role besides the campaign? What other duties that you were
My role was, at that point, was, well, throughout most of the thing, was mostly secretarial, and just managing the office, organizing volunteers for the, whatever we needed them for. for at the moment. It really was basically secretarial. Typing tons of letters, making millions of copies, lugging things down to the post office, having these huge mailings.
Was that mainly to religious groups, or was that, who was the focus of the mailings?
Well, if we were soliciting for funds, it was not particularly religious, was not oriented to religious groups. Now, there were times when, I remember we did have one campaign that was organized. I wonder if Don Walton was the one who started that. Don Walton was a member of the steering committee who has since died. He was, I forget his exact title, he was like the head Methodist in Mahoning Valley. And I remember we did have one campaign that was geared specifically towards Methodists, and we got and that was a fundraising campaign for the coalition itself, not Save Our Valley. This was for our operating funds. When we did send out mailings asking either for Save Our Valley savings accounts or for funds for the coalition, we never really geared it toward religious people or lay people, except for this one Methodist thing, and that was just because Don Walton apparently was behind it. And that was pretty successful. They were very generous.
Do you remember was there a specific meeting that was targeted at? Was there a hierarchical meeting out of town or someplace that was geared towards?
Well, no. I don't know if there was, because if there had been, I would not have been a part of it. But there must have been, because it was a statewide campaign. I don't think that Don Walton would have been appealing for funds to people in Cincinnati and Toledo unless he had discussed it. But that was something
What I was referring to was, I know at times there were meetings, like in New York and other mm-hmm. places, where an appeal was made for funds, and I was wondering if perhaps that was somehow tied into one of those efforts.
I doubt that it ever got that far. I don't think this particular one was that big.
How many offices did you have in all? Was it just limited to Youngstown, or did you have several satellite offices?
Oh, yeah. We had a statewide organization. We had an office in Cleveland, Toledo, Columbus, Cincinnati, Dayton. I know there was an effort to get one started in Steubenville, and that fell through. That's only five. I think there was another one.
Do you recall who headed those? Was it just like a one-person staff?
Yes, it was. It was just a one-person.
And now the real... Who are those people?
You know, if I had thought of it before you came, I would have looked for my little phone book, which I probably still have. I can probably remember some of them. Cleveland was Phyllis Mucha, M-U-C-H-A. Almost all of these people operated out of either large churches or diocese office or something free of charge. Toledo was Lola Glover. Columbus was Wiggins or something. Strange name. Cincinnati was. You should have told me yesterday you were going to ask me these names. If you have to have them, I can get them. I think I have them in my phone book. I found the list of the state office staff. Akron was represented by Pat Selwood. Karen Stenson was the Cincinnati representative. Phyllis Mucha was from Cleveland. Jim Wiggin was our Columbus representative. The Reverend Richard Reiter was our first Dayton representative, and after a while he quit, I don't even remember why, and was replaced by Carolyn Moix. And our Toledo representative was Lola Glover. That's six. That's the whole staff.
At one point in the Save Our Valley campaign, you moved on to a national scale, or tried to. Could you kind of fill us in as to who moved where and what the strategy was then?
Do you mean whose idea was it to...
Yeah, basically, whose idea was it and who made the physical move, you know, who went to where?
Since at that point, that was fairly early after I started with the coalition, and at that point, I was not attending steering committee meetings, which I did later in my employment. At that point, I was not going to steering committee meetings. So I would have to guess that that everyone on the steering committee, probably not the executive committee, but everyone on the steering committee probably went to their own denominations on a national level and appealed for funds. It certainly wouldn't do any good for, much good for Dick Fernandez to go to the Catholic diocese. And I know he did have a lot of, I know he had some Jewish friends in high places that he may have contacted, but I'm just assuming that every member of the steering committee approached their own denomination.
What I was referring to was, wasn't there a point where Reverend Fernandez moved an office to New York?
Oh, yes, but that was well after the Save Our Valley campaign. I thought you meant Save Our Valley campaign, in which we tried to get national denominations to open up very large savings accounts in local banks.
Okay.
Is that what you meant?
No, I'm moving beyond that. I'm sorry. What was the move to New York? Is that just to enhance to spread the word, if you will?
Yes, it was. We just felt that it was time to get more of the nation involved, that if we wanted to develop the political clout that we needed to get Washington, to get the White House to listen to us, that we were going to have to get some national religious leaders on board to put some pressure on Washington, that Bishop Malone alone couldn't do it, and John Sherrick alone couldn't do it, that we needed some big names. And so he did open up an office in New York, and I think ran into a lot of red tape. I think he just ran into... he was successful to a point, but not as successful as I would have thought he would be, because I by this time I knew his personality and how dynamic and convincing he could be. All the people that he was contacting, of course, they had their own denominations to answer to. This wasn't the only issue that they were interested in at the time. But you're right, that's why he went. We needed bigger names.
Do you know where his office was located?
I could probably find it if I page through here. I think that Dick Fernandez operated out of the same building as John Collins, so I will give you Collins' address just in case. I think that they were in the same building and just their offices were down the hall or something. But John Collins' address is room 566, 475 Riverside Drive, New York, New York, 10027.
Okay. What was the response to the campaign locally, getting back to the Save Our Valley campaign? Was there...
You know, if we're going to continue this, we're going to have to get something straight. When you say Save Our Valley campaign, you don't necessarily mean just the savings accounts. You mean the whole
effort
of the coalition, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, because when you say Save Our Valley, I keep thinking this, just the savings accounts, which is what that was called. You mean the whole campaign. Do you want to know the reactions of any group in particular, or
just
the community in general?
What kind of response you got, you know, from the community at large?
At times we were grateful and overwhelmed at the response that we got, the positive response we got. But I think that as we were going on day to day, when we were honest with ourselves, and now a couple years later, the response was disappointing. It was really amazing. We were getting so much publicity. We were in the news every day or several times a week, and on television and on the radio. And it was really amazing the number of people who didn't know what the Ecumenical Coalition was and couldn't even pronounce it, which is surprising. And we were really in the news a lot. Most people knew what we wanted to do, and that was all. All they knew was that we wanted to save the steel mills. Then there were a smaller group of people who knew how we wanted to do it through worker ownership. And then as the campaign got increasingly sophisticated and complicated, there were fewer and fewer people who understood or even knew what we were about. Time and time again, we would have rallies or meetings or different kind of meetings, say at union halls. And time again, we were disappointed at the turnout. When some of the other mills started to shut down after Sheet and Tube was closed, McDonald Works, and they started forming their own groups and trying to do something, I generally felt sorry for them, but for one fleeting moment, I thought, it serves you right, because you weren't there when we needed you. Why didn't you know 2 or 3 years ago that you could have helped us? But I would say the response was disappointing. I don't know if we could have done anything to help. I guess it's maybe just human nature that people don't respond unless it affects them personally. And even the large number of steel workers who were laid off, we still didn't draw huge numbers. Whenever we needed volunteers, and I had a large list of steel workers that I would call, I could count on the same group of maybe 8, no more than that.
Out of how many?
Out of 5,000, or how many, you know,
oh,
however
yeah,
many.
Oh, I thought you meant out of, I'm going to start referring to the list. You said you had a group.
I probably had a list of, well, the list probably initially came from the group who showed up at the Boardman Methodist Church, that very first meeting, and I wasn't even aware of the coalition, and that was even before the office was established. The initial list probably came from there, in which people signed up and said they would be willing to work in any number of different areas. And then I would call a steel worker, and he'd give me 2 or 3 names, or I'd call a union president or vice president, and he'd give me 2 or 3 names. So I don't think my list ever approached 100. But out of 5,000 that were laid off, you had 100 people that I knew about that were vaguely interested, and then you only had no more than a dozen who were willing to come down and work.
Given all of that, do you think that the overall effort was successful by whatever criteria you want to measure success?
I don't know. You know this, a couple of these plane plants that may open out at the airport, some people may even say that they're here, they're trying to get started here because of the coalition. Because at the time that we were getting all this publicity about Youngstown, there were a lot of reports out in the national press about how it was such a depressed area. And I think there probably were industries that took a look at Youngstown that maybe wouldn't even have heard about Youngstown or wouldn't have considered it. I don't see too many of them flocking here. Was it a success or was it not a success? I don't feel in my heart that it was a failure, but if you're talking about tangible results, I guess it was a failure. But at the time I was going through it, I didn't feel like it.
I wasn't putting a measurement on, you know, how I was viewing it, strictly because success can be weighed in many terms. So I was just trying to get your reaction to your criteria.
I think there were some successful aspects to it. I think that the publicity that Youngstown got, worldwide publicity, had to help. You know, maybe it won't even pay off for 7 or 8 years. What if some guy comes in here 10 years from now with a plant and said, you know, I read about Youngstown 10 years ago, but at the time I wasn't in a financial position to move my company here. I mean, it might pay off in the long run. I don't know. But we did get a lot of good publicity. A lot of people worked hard. I think the steel workers, even though it's a small number, I think some of them became organized, other than on a union level. Groups of them got together, and they did try to do something. I would say we had limited success in several areas, but not, we were not successful in our overall, in our big goal.
Do you think there's anything, is there anything that you think that's important that I haven't mentioned that you would like to mention that was part of that total effort?
You know, the one thing that really bugs me about the whole thing is that we had been promised help by Jimmy Carter, or at least he hinted at help time and time again, and we felt that the White House lied to us and deceived us, and that at the time that Jack Watson was telling us we had a good chance of having our feasibility study okayed, at the same time we find out later that they really didn't have any intention of considering it seriously. I felt that we were stabbed in the back by Carter. What I find ironic and almost disgusting is the fact that last November in the election, he carried this area. And sometimes you just want to kick yourself in the head and say, how could they do that? How could they vote for this man who practically, you know, who's shoveling dirt on the grave of Youngstown as fast as he can?
You're referring to some of the data that came out from the Freedom of Information Act?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Do you know who acquired that information?
You mean who applied?
Who actually?
Well, my husband may have been one of them, because at the time he was covering this for the Vindicator, which made for an interesting home life. Not only did he seek that information while he was at the Vindicator, but he also went after information now that he's at the Tribune, that may have been concerning the merger rather than the coalition. I don't know if Dick Fernandez or anybody connected.
Some individual, I don't remember her name, had applied for information through Congressman Carney's office in relation to a Freedom of Information Act suit related to the merger, and I thought maybe that was somehow related.
Somebody connected with Carney's office?
No, it was an individual in the district who had applied through Congressman Carney's office to get information. And then
no, I don't know who that might be.
Okay. Finally, what do you feel that clergy should be involved in these kind of issues, in social justice issues?
Yes, I do. I didn't see anyone else coming forward. During Jackie Offer's campaign to try to get the Committee of 100 organized, she went to mostly businessmen. She really didn't deal with the clergy. I didn't see them coming forward with ideas. They would stand back and say, it's not going to work, and this is the reason. They didn't come forward with any ideas of their own. I don't see any reason why clergy should not be involved. These men, I do not attend any church regularly. I'm a kind of a lapsed Catholic. I don't consider myself an unreligious person. I just don't go to church. I have never met so many admirable people in my life. Almost everyone connected with the coalition, the ministers, were so dedicated and sincere about what they were doing. They were really decent people. I had a lot of contact with priests, and generally I found myself more impressed with the Protestants than I did with the priests involved. Not only the priests in the coalition, but the priests I knew from my past involvements with the church. I think that anybody who has the determination and the drive and the foresight, anybody who wants to help, why not? I think that Youngstown desperately needs anybody that can help. And they were tireless in their efforts, literally tireless. I've never seen people work so hard in my life as the steering committee and the executive committee did on this effort.
Thank you very much for giving us your time this afternoon.
Oh, you're quite welcome.